John, if you're playing or talking, nobody's hearing it.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 11th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern If you're listening live over a radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone has a question and you'd like to email a question, you can send it to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of the website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. Last week we read chapter 6. This week we're going to read chapter 7. So, the Gospel of John, chapter 7, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 7. After these things Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand. His brethren therefore said unto him, Depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the works that thou doest. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. Then Jesus said unto them, My time is not yet come, but your time is alway ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Go ye up unto this feast. I go not up yet unto this feast. For my time is not yet full come. When he had said these words unto them, he abode still in Galilee. But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up unto the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Then the Jews sought him at the feast, and said, Where is he? And there was much murmuring among the people concerning him, for some said, He is a good man. Others said, Nay, but he deceiveth the people. Howbeit no man spake openly of him, for fear of the Jews. Now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. And the Jews marveled, saying, How knoweth this man letters, having never learned? Jesus answered them and said, My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God, or whether I speak of myself. He that speaketh of himself seeketh his own glory, but he that seeketh his glory that sent him, the same is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. Did not Moses give you the law? And yet none of you keepeth the law. Why go ye about to kill me? The people answered and said, Thou hast a devil. Who goeth about to kill thee? Jesus answered and said unto them, I have done one work, and ye all marvel. Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers. And ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receive circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Then said some of them of Jerusalem, Is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly, and they say nothing unto him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Howbeit we know this man whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, Ye both know me, and ye know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him, and said, When Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? The Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then said Jesus unto them, Yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. Ye shall seek me, and shall not find me. And where I am, thither ye cannot come. Then said the Jews among themselves, Whither will he go, that we shall not find him? Will he go unto the dispersed among the Gentiles, and teach the Gentiles? What manner of saying is this, that he said, Ye shall seek me, and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot come? In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the Scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. But this spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him should receive. For the Holy Ghost was not yet given, because that Jesus was not yet glorified. Many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said, Of a truth, this is the prophet. Others said, This is the Christ. But some said, Shall Christ come out of Galilee? Hath not the Scripture said, That Christ cometh of the seed of David, and out of the town of Bethlehem, where David was? So there was a division among the people because of him. And some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. Then came the officers to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto them, Why have ye not brought him? The officers answered, Never man spake like this man. Then answered them the Pharisees, Are ye also deceived? Have any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed on him? But this people, who knoweth not the law, are cursed. Nicodemus saith unto them, He that came to Jesus by night, being one of them, Doth our law judge any man before it hear him, and know what he doeth? They answered and said unto him, Art thou also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee ariseth no prophet. And every man went unto his own house.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight, announcements? Or Terry? I don't know if it looks like Jen might have left.
Yeah, Jan's having some computer problems, and so he went out to reboot. I thought he was going to get back before it ended.
Yeah, it looks like it now. He's just muted at the moment. Maybe he's not fully booted. I don't know. All right, well, anyway, do you know the questions or any announcements? I know we spoke about the sheriff coming on.
Yeah, I'm chasing him down right now. Hang on, just give me another 10, 15 seconds.
All right, I'll just talk about the sheriff while we're waiting. All right, for those who are just joining us, some people joined us a little early and heard this conversation concerning Sheriff Dar. Sheriff Dar is going to come on next week's program, Monday. And we're taking questions. If anybody wants to ask Sheriff Dar a question, you can send your question to, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. You're going to want to do that quickly, though, within the next day or two. Just email your questions, and then when Sheriff Dar is here, we'll pose some of those questions. We'll pose as many as we can anyway. So that'll be next Monday, the 15th. We'll be sending out an email to let people know that. And I guess that's it on Sheriff Dar. Terry, are we back yet?
I am back. I don't see Jan, however. So I'm sorry.
It looks like the room again. Maybe he was there on the bottom. But all right, do you have the questions? Do you know of any questions or announcements?
I don't have any announcements. Maybe Jan has those. He can type them to me, or he can tell me. I only have one question from somebody else on Sovereign Law, and it
Let me just say something first. I know I saw an email come in today to mail to question. No, where did it come in? I think it came into mail. It didn't come into questions, but it came into mail, so you probably got it. And Jan, I saw Jan had it. And they wanted to talk to me about something, and it sounded like it was something about things we're doing. In any event, the purpose of Monday night is for people to be able to come in and talk to the founders. Both founders are usually here, and, of course, a lot of our leadership is usually here. So if anybody, wants to ask a question when it comes in through the mail or through questions, through the mail particularly, on a personal level, they should just bring it to the Monday night room, because it's difficult to find the time to be able to go out and talk to a lot of people that do want to talk to us. But again, that's why we're here every Monday. All right, with that, go ahead with the question, Terry.
Yeah. I'm back too, John, if you want.
All right. So
go ahead, Jan.
Question. The first question is kind of long. Right. It starts out with a statement, ex parte, Dickey and Dickey versus Davis, travel is not a privilege requiring licensing, vehicle registration, or forced insurances. Then the Clearfield Doctrine for corporations are not and can never be sovereign. They are not real. They are a fiction and only exist on paper. Five, therefore, all laws created by these government corporations are private corporate regulations called public law, statutes, codes, and ordinances to conceal their true nature. Six, since these government bodies are not sovereign, they cannot promulgate or enforce criminal laws. They can only create and enforce civil laws, which are duty-bound to comply with the law of contracts. The law of contracts regulates signed written documents or agreements and complete transparency. Did you ever agree to be arrested and tried under any of their corporate statutes? Did you ever agree to contract with them by agreeing to be sued for violating their corporate regulations?
Are these the questions now?
Well, these are statements, but
yeah.
Could be questions.
It sounded like you just turned to questions, I thought. But
yeah. And then number eight, enforcement of these corporate statutes by local, state, and federal law enforcement officers are unlawful actions being committed against the sovereign public, and these officers can be held personally liable for their actions. And then the last is just a statement, our government's just another corporation. So I'm not sure, John, what you should do with that. It doesn't really seem to be a major
question.
Well,
first of all, if you want to answer all that, each one, first of all, anybody that comes to this meeting should know the answer to most of those anyway.
Right.
Look, did you ever agree to such and such? From the cop's perspective, from the town's perspective, or whoever's given the ticket, yes, you did, because you got a driver's license and you have a title and we own your car and all that crap, right? So we know how they're operating, and that's not going to go away until after we get to the other side of devolution. I mean, that all needs to be fixed, and it will get fixed. I think even Trump was talking about that at one point. But I don't think you got to worry about it, to be honest. You know, it's not something that we want to go to court over, because I think you're just wasting time when you can pay, you know, even if it's a $200-$400 ticket, that's the cheapest you'll ever get out of court for. You know, and I'm not saying lay down, but you know what I mean. You got to pick your battles.
Yeah, but this is a good place for people to learn. If people want to learn how to go into a court, you go into a court that really can't do too much damage to you, the worst they could do and say is give you the ticket and give you the fine for the ticket, and that's the worst thing, so that's okay. Matter of fact, I recently got a ticket. I'm so surprised because I haven't gotten tickets in quite some time. I had my radar on and detector and didn't pick it up. I don't know how. But anyway, I got a ticket. And I'm going to send in a paper. I'm going to update the papers that I've laid up on our website under Education Starts Here. You come down to Law, and then you go over to Court Forms and Process. We do have a that people can use, and just make it your own, put your own information in it, of course, that you can challenge the court, the traffic court. And that's what it is, a traffic court. Now, I'm writing a paper for myself, so I'm going to update the one that I have up there once I get it done, so people will have that available if they want to use that as a framework in order to deal with tickets. But yeah, as Gerard said, after devolution, it's not going to be around. NLA, through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, intends on going into the courts to sue the federal judiciary directly. Bring it straight to the United States Supreme Court. We'll give them the opportunity to do the right thing, and if not, we'll see them too, and let the people decide. I think we do have a court now, or will at the end of the day have a court, that will start to rule on things unanimously, on the things that are constitutional that they've been abusing all this time. And so we're going to start trying to bring the courts of justice back in the federal courts. Once the federal court justices are brought back, so someone's got, okay, that sets the stage for if you go into state court and they violate the Constitution and they haven't straightened up or whatever, you can always move your case into federal court for cause for champion the Constitution, because that's their purpose. That's what they're there for. But until that happens, you know, hey, you know, pay the ticket or learn how the court system works. Write a paper and challenge it and see once what you can do with it. I know that in the past I've been at least 50%, successful in the sense that I'll send a paper in, then I never hear anything back from the court, nothing. So they ignore me, I ignore them, and that's that. The other half, they'd give me a hard time, and I'd just pay the ticket. Last time I went to court, I decided not to pay the ticket. I told the judge that we're going to take this into federal court. I'm not coming back here. I'll sue you for denying me my due process because you can't give it to me, and you're hijacking me into a court unknown. And they talked it over with the prosecutor, you know, on the side, and came back and dismissed the case. So you could try that. Worst case scenario, they come back and say, $200, buddy. So you figure out what you want to do from there. You could bring it into federal court and sue. Not that you'll win in there either these days. Who knows how that would go. I know I threatened a lot, but I've never taken these traffic cases into a federal court. But next time I might. I'll see. All right. Anything else?
Yes, I believe this was left over from last Monday. It says, recently we have been noticing the implementation and execution of the surety bonds with apparent success. There have been a few videos and discussions recently on Patriot Soapbox, particularly with Mickey Klon, one of the founders of Bonds for the Win. Does NLA still suggest this method amidst its current success, and is this process the same as in the bond form under the court forms and the process tab, demand for oath and bond on the NLA website?
Yeah, we do still support the idea. As a matter of fact, I'm pursuing that in federal court right now. We'll probably be pursuing it in a state court case we have also. And we'll go after this. They don't want to give them up. It's an uphill battle, tooth and nail. They're fighting, but we're going to fight back tooth and nail to get them. They have a duty to give it to us. There is a purpose why they take an oath, and there is a purpose why they have to place a bond. And that is, you know, for the people to have in order to keep them in line. Now, I do know that we've done our cases with both and teaching also within our courses. We were teaching two ways to do it. You could do it with notice and demands, or you could do it with a writ quo warranto. I think a writ quo warranto is the way to go, especially if you have the sheriff with you, because then it's really official. And from that place, it goes into the court if it's necessary, at least for the filing. But the enforcement could be done by the sheriff. That's why it's important for committees of safety to get themselves together, connect with the sheriff, have the sheriff working with you, and then you can bring these people back under the control of the people. And so I do know that they moved over. What's her name, Gerard? Do you remember? Or Jan, do you remember that woman's name?
What are you talking about?
Bonds for the Wind.
Bonds for the Wind.
Yeah, her, she's...
Mickey
Klon, right.
Okay, yeah, Nikki, I think she was doing it with, they were doing a lettuce process. I know she came over here and got some education. We're definitely trying to connect with her and see if we can work with her. But she did come over here and she learned some stuff from us, I guess, and now she's doing it with Coral Wanto. So, you know, she's kind of graduating on that. We understand that she might have some success. We're not 100% sure on that because we really don't know the interpretations of the actions that took place after that case. And I don't think she did either. But maybe she did and she's just not saying yet. I don't know. But we're going to find out what's going on. Gerard, do you have any other new information on that? Or just what we heard on the videos?
Well, did you watch the Nino video with her? When he's pressing her, and she said,
I watched that one. Yeah, she did.
Yeah, that I turned it into Stigna or whatever it was, which was the Treasury Department, and then she claims a bunch of white unmarked cars came, and those people got disappeared, so to speak.
And we don't know how to interpret that yet.
Well, look at
found on it.
what she did would trigger a military tribunal. If the military answered, that's what they would get.
Did they get handcuffed and put in the back of the car?
Yeah, according to her, she got a little balky. She didn't want to say too much because I don't think the White Hats wanted that out quite so soon. So they like to do things. I think maybe they're doing things a little slow in the beginning until they're ready to pull the plug on everything. You know what I mean? So I don't know if they're selectively picking out cases that they respond to, but you know they have a duty to respond. If you send in a report, an affidavit, making them aware of a crime, you know, as far as that office goes in that military, they have a duty. So I don't know. Maybe they thought that she was documented good enough that they could do that. I don't know. I think that's kind of what they're waiting for. They're waiting for people to get their heads screwed on straight and their paperwork straight so that they can go in and do this and not worry about, you know, having it screwed up in any way. So she's really covered the bases as far as her documentation and how she does it and the first and second notice and opportunity to repair.
I think she's moved away from that now. She went to the meeting with Corwanto in the back pocket. They disobeyed the people, and then they
yeah, but that was after all those steps.
Okay, so they're still taking a lot of steps. Okay, yeah, we're teaching a different way to do it. Just step one, and that's it. With the sheriff, either they obey at the time when you approach the board, if you're dealing with a board, and if they don't, they want to obey the people and they want to continue destroying, particularly, let's take scoreboards.
I might stand corrected, John. She said when we basically demanded their oaths and bonds. What do they call it when you?
It was a notice and demand or a call wanton?
No, it wasn't a notice and demand.
They had a three-letter process. I know that.
Yeah, but she said when they went in to search the, there was a word they use when you search out information, you know, or it's like subpoenaing it. But what happened is what came back was they had no oaths and bonds and that they were not even in office properly and that they were serving a foreign corporation. So at that point, she didn't need any of those steps. She sent it to the Treasury Department because really that is their purview. This is foreign people using foreign courts to usurp the Constitution. It was a perfect case for them to come in and arrest everybody, the judges, whatever, whoever was there. You know, this was a board of supervisors, huh?
Have you tried to make contact with her yet?
No, I haven't. That's probably my fault because I've been so busy with everything, but I plan on...
We'll see what you could do sooner than later because, you know, I'd like to invite her over when Sheriff Dodd, I'd like to have a personal conversation with her, maybe a couple of the our leadership with her, and see once how we can maybe arrange that we can work together. Maybe she can educate us in some things that we don't know about this system, and we can work things out together and maybe get her more involved with what we're doing and kind of combine forces.
This might be prophetic for her, tying her up with Sheriff Dar, because...
Well, that's great. I'd like her to be here for that and then give her the opportunity to come on and give her a day where she can talk.
And it makes both of them more powerful. It makes Dar more powerful and it makes her more powerful. And they're going to think twice about going after her.
Let's try to do that if you can this week. Try to make her into her stuff.
I think everything is blowing up in our faces here all at the same time, it seems like.
Well, chop, chop.
Yeah, chop, chop.
All right. Anything else, Jim?
Okay, there was one that came up last week. I'm not sure how it was resolved. It was sent in by a PA resident. It's a direct tax called a per capita tax on everybody over the age of 21. They have been requesting by phone and by letters and so on information on this tax and get zero response. And they wonder Could they use a notice and demand to extract correspondence, or what would NLA recommend?
Well, I know that they were trying, this was a state trying to collect or a town. Give me a little more information.
They called it a per capita tax. It's sent to all Pennsylvania residents over the age of 21.
The entire state?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we did talk a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about it. But basically, yes, a per capita tax is a lawful tax, but not the way they're doing it. A per capita tax is really comes upon the people. If the federal government wants more money, needs more money, then they'll approach the state and they'll do something per capita. What do they call it? Per capita? What's the word?
Per capita? It doesn't say it's a federal tax as of...
But the law and the Constitution puts it this way. That they can, that the federal government can collect that tax. The state shouldn't be collecting that tax. They got sales tax, but the federal can collect it from the state. And when they count the people, go through that process, and they know how many people are in the state, then they'll say, well, we want $20 for the head of every individual in the United States. And so that would go on to the burden of the state itself, where the state would have to pay that. In order for them to pay that, they would have to probably maybe bump up their sales tax by an eighth of a percent or whatever it is that they think they have to do in order to get that money. But that they would collect it in a lawful way. You can't come and tax a person's head direct on. That's unlawful. You can't tax their property. You can't tax their income. You can't tax their person. Those three things, that makes you a slave if they tax you in any of those three ways. But they are doing that, of course.
And it's the state doing it. It's not the federal government.
Right.
They don't even have the power or the authority to do that. Their legal tax is sales tax. Raise the sales tax if they need more money. You know?
So what would be the proper response for them to get that information?
Well, look at I found out something a while back that the state is a paper tiger when it comes to tax collecting. They won't come out after you. They threaten you, but they don't come out. So I've been in places in administrative courts, argued with these people, and didn't give in to what they wanted, and they never did anything. The states rely on the federal government to make the collections, and then they get their piece of the action, whatever that might be, however they collect it.
Well, it says right in their own book that your state income tax liability is based on your federal tax return. So if you don't send in a federal return, the state doesn't know what the hell to do, I guess.
They don't know what to do, no.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. That's their problem.
I
don't want to tell them anything, really.
Yeah, John, you don't need to tell them anything.
You know, I'm thinking about it now. They need to do what they think they need to do. It's unlawful. If they want to fight it, they can take it to court. If they don't want to pay it, that's their business. I don't want to tell them that they shouldn't pay it. I don't want no one coming knocking on my door, concerning that.
They can't get any information on it, John. It's a phantom. It's just a tax bill that arrives, and they have to pay it or else.
Oh, so they're sending papers to the state, and the state's not answering them.
Yes.
That's a crime. They're committing a crime. When there's a duty to answer and they don't answer, we have a right to petition for redress of grievances.
They use the local tax collection firm, and that firm goes out and collects from all of the residents age 21 and over.
That's where you need a sheriff to go in and pick them up off the street and tell them you can't pick this tax up because the state's not even answering the basic questions, and it's a federal thing and it's not a state thing. And so guess what? If you want to collect this tax in my county, I'm going to arrest your ass if I find you.
Well, let's say, look, they come. They hired a private corporation in order to collect the tax. You tell the corporation to go to Hades, okay? Now what? What are they going to do? They're going to try to screw up your credit?
If it's like their personal property taxes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know how they would do that. But, look, at a private corporation, you can't come out and just seize your property. The only one that can get away with that, it seems, is the IRS. Even the state can't do that. So that's why they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, if it's a corporation trying to make the collection, that is around, you know, that's weird. But if that's how they're doing it, then of course it's unlawful. But what can they do if you don't pay them? I mean, that's the question. They're a corporation. What can they do? I don't know that they could do anything. Now, they can't ruin your credit because, it's even unlawful for them to give you a bad credit line. You know, anybody that's got bad credit, you can sue the credit, those credit companies that report on your credit, you can sue them. And you can have all that bad stuff removed. Whether it's true or not, it's irrelevant. It's still all hearsay because until they get a lien on you, that's the only thing that they can report, that there is a lien on you, and it would have to be a lawful lien, not an IRS lien, because an IRS lien is not a lien at all. It's a notice of lien. It doesn't exist. All things are fraud. There's no 4490. They have no fiduciary authority over the individual. It's just more fraud. But they're the only ones that seem to be able to get away with it, and federal judges are all frightened of them.
You know, they may feel comfortable collecting that under the state income tax. I mean, they're calling it a per capita, per head tax. So, and they're probably covering under the income tax, right?
That's unlawful. That's called the slaves tax. You won't find it in the Constitution. The question is where's the law?
I guess where I was going is you know, like North Carolina has a personal property tax, and you're supposed to make an estimate and then send them in the estimate, and that's your tax on personal property, like if you got a new car, this or that. They've been doing it for years, but I think that that tax they can attach to your house. And in New York State here, they're taking your house away unlawfully, what they're doing it with their in rem procedure, which we know all about.
Right.
So I don't know if this would fall into, if they feel comfortable doing an in rem per capita tax type thing. I don't know how they can do that. You know what I mean? In rem, that's an admiralty thing, like with a ship, with a house. But this is you. You're ahead, like you said. You're a slave, right? I don't know how they would pursue against you, is what I'm saying.
You're in Pennsylvania, Jan. Have you heard anything directly about this?
I am retired in long since, and I did have to pay a fairly steep town tax because I lived here and worked here. Not necessarily related to salary, I don't think it was.
Yeah, well, this is the per capita tax, which means by the head. You have to give me $100 or I put you in jail.
Which it doesn't sound like it's legal the way you're doing it.
Of course it's not legal. It's a slave tax. You can't do it. Constitution makes it clear. No direct tax, period. That applies to the states, too.
Well, that's your answer. That's tell them that. Nothing will help.
Yeah, well, look, they're playing a game also with the wording in the Constitution, because the Constitution makes a per capita tax lawful, but if the federal government comply a per capita tax on all the individuals throughout all the United States, and the states have to pay it, but the states, in order to pay it, just have to collect it out of their own tax system that's lawful. So
it has to be equal among across the board.
Exactly. Not directly on the person. You can avoid paying the tax. Any tax you can't avoid is illegal.
Right, right.
You can avoid the tax. You can just not buy things that you have to pay tax on, and that's a way to avoid the tax. I mean, that's a little tough, but that's the way it is.
So that's a good answer for the guy. I mean, we're not sending this out. He has to be listening to this to get his answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think we've got pretty good. And, you know, I wanted to say something on that last one about the traffic court. In reality, if you use the paperwork that even we provide and you send it in, they don't want to do any of that. By the time you get your third paper in there, they kick you out. They find any way they can. First, they'll lower it to do this. They really don't want to fight with you. And you get a reputation when you start sending paperwork in those – you know, the local DA, he doesn't feel comfortable with that, and it's too much like work. They want you to just come in and bow down, and they always lower it. You know what I mean? They we're going to make you a deal. We'll offer you parking on the pavement, and they charge you some ridiculous fine. And no points. No, thank you. So I think if you resist and send a couple of pieces of paper in, they always end up caving in is the right answer in our experience with
yeah, most of the times they do, and if you do push it all the way into the court and you're doing it right, yeah, you'll probably win. They just don't want to deal with it anymore. But, you know, because really you start pressing the judge. But you have to press the judge in the right way. You have to be, you know, polite and nice. But the bottom line is the judge makes a ruling. Well, what did you rule on? I have an affidavit. My affidavit rules the court. How can you rule that I have to pay it? This guy didn't put anything in. How did you come to that conclusion?
Now you're really a burr under his saddle, aren't you?
Exactly right. That's exactly the point. That's what you have to do. But you have to do it nicely, you know. But in any event, let's move on. Anything else, John?
No, that was the last, John.
Okay, we're going to go over to the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue? We do have a couple of people in the queue. Hang on a minute. Where'd you get this one? Oh, okay. Yeah, is that one? Yeah, if anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, *6 and 1. If you're coming in on an app or a browser or an app on your phone, there should be a button to enter the queue. So we'll start taking some questions in the queue now. Okay, first person, it looks like Kenna. Is what happened? I think we lost that person.
Oh, well,
Cynthia, how you doing, Cynthia? What state are you from again?
The Aloha State.
Aloha. God, we haven't heard from you in a long time. How's things going on over there?
Oh, it's going good. We have 7 months since the Maui fires, and everybody knows they weren't natural, and we weren't able to come on because our church was really involved with helping out families, and it was amazing. We had a connection. There's a lot of Hawaiians in Las Vegas, and we had over 40 containers, the 40-foot-long containers shipped over, and we just spent hours and months, literally, providing for families. It was none of it was ever asked. God provided. It was amazing in the wake of such a terrible tragedy. And so I'm starting to get back into the swing of studying, and I wanted to ask you one question and then share something about traffic court here in Hawaii, locally. So if you recall, I left my job at Department of Education, I took your course, and I have my case completely written. Now what I'm needing to do is my employer, the superintendent, they wrongfully terminated me as well, which I was hoping for. So my question, though, is I want to create some dynamic communication to now it's time for me to let them know that they have done me harm. And so I'm working on the concept of sending a notice of claim to them so that it starts the process, because I haven't done that yet. And I'm wondering if you can comment, give me guidance on notice of claim. And then, like I said, afterward, I want to share about a traffic court situation.
Did you give them an opportunity to cure?
Talking about, he's going to give them a notice of claim, which would be like a proof of claim that, for instance, the government would.
Right, that is their opportunity.
Right, and then they could make it right. You can give them 30 days to make it right, and then from there you could move it into other things. Then you'd want to do a notice and demand for. You probably want to do that before you want to do anything in the court. You give them another 30 days with a notice and demand. You're looking for their bond. You're looking for their oath, and you're looking for their financials. We have plenty of examples on our website on that. We have one under the law where I set the other ones in the course. So that would be the next step after that. So the proof of claim is good, number one. Notice and demand. Maybe the notice and demand could be, you can combine that as the proof of claim. And maybe do it once in a 30-day process. Then from there, then you would move it into the federal court, into the state court. And you'd want to move it in a way that you're looking for a default. Now, you may not be able to win that. You should be able to, but you may not be able to. But at least it's a start. Now they have. you want to pursue this in a way. You want to pursue this in a way that that you can potentially really pursue the bond instead of going into the court if possible.
Okay. Right. Okay. So when you say proof of claim, is that the same as notice of claim?
Well, a notice of claim, proof of claim would be the same thing. You know, the IRS calls it a proof of claim. It's a form 4490. Any government agency that comes to try to collect money off you has to give you a proof of claim, which is an affidavit form.
Okay.
That's the law. Now, they don't do that, but that's what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay.
And but if you do a notice and demand, I think that's the best way to go because you can get your default. You might be able to get the oath and the bonds. You might want to first pursue it in the court, take it into the court for enforcement to get oath and bond, okay, and then deal with the bond company because you have a better chance of winning it through the bond company than you would going into these courts.
Well, on that point, there was a group of us that were studying together before we knew about National Liberty Alliance, and we'd actually kind of did what that Mickey did with we studied some of what she was doing, oaths and bonds, and because the superintendent here of the school system works for the state. And let me tell you, there was a lot of people all over Hawaii trying to get oaths and bonds, doing FOIA requests, and everybody on all these different islands, because we communicated, we couldn't get oaths and bonds, and we don't know if we were getting the runaround, and we're talking several dozen people here, or if they just don't have them. It was difficult, and it's so corrupt here. It's a whole nother corruption.
You're going to run into what Mickey Klein ran into, pushed her to reporting them to the military because they were operating illegally, unlawfully. They don't, you know, they do this thing with a blanket bond.
Yeah.
And there's problems with that. I mean, they can do that, but they never do it right. They never put enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a problem collecting it. But,
oh, yeah. Actually, when you said that, thank you. I do remember what happened was we had learned that the most corrupt corporations that are, quote, the state, they insure themselves. And that's where we ended up finding that they actually insure themselves. So they don't do anything because then they just say, oh, no, there was no harm done. So now, because he is a state employee, basically.
What does that mean, they insured themselves?
In other words, you can put a bond up saying this is in lieu of my insurance.
Well, they have to be able to produce that bond. If you demand that bond, they have to give it.
Well,
to
they
you.
Probably got some bullcrap bond, but they're what are they? The judge, jury, and execution? No, we're not going to pay. We don't think that you know.
That's the purpose of a bond. A bonding company will have an administrative court and make a decision. And if this is improper, you can then take it into the courts. But usually, I hear that usually the bonding company is pretty good with this because on top of that, they have their financials, and you want their financials too because if it doesn't cover enough, you can pursue their financials. But the bonding company will also pursue their financials.
Are you saying when they self-insure, are they getting a bond, or are they just saying, we got this money in this account here, and we're going
to... bond. The law requires a bond.
Like I said, we spoke with a number of people across the Hawaiian Islands that were pursuing this, and everybody came up with dead ends, and everybody was trying it at different ways, different angles, and so it's really difficult to tell what's what, you know. And we don't have a sheriff here, as you well know.
That's the big problem, I was going to say. That's a major problem, and we will be working on that for you soon.
Yeah, yep. So anyway, so what I'm hearing you say is definitely to create the dynamic communication, I want to do either a notice of claim or proof of claim, and basically sending them.
Yes, I would suggest to do it this way. Do a notice and demand. Also, you can go work with Wins for the Bond and see if they, you know, they'll assist you. But if you want our assistance, my suggestion is you've got the paperwork. You're in the course, and I got the paperwork outside the course also. But you've got that. Why don't you put together a paper? We'll give them a notice and demand, and give them X amount of days and build a fort. Just use the wording that's in the paperwork, mm-hmm. and then move that into the local court for enforcement at that point, the state court. Move it into the court for enforcement, okay? And now they may give you a hard time with that, but the bottom line is you write your paper when you move it in. This is, you can put a wherefore clause, what you really want on this. So you bring it in to the court. Now, you really don't want to push for a jury on the one hand, but considering the way these courts are today, maybe you do want a jury. I don't know.
Yeah,
but you open up a court of record. Okay, that's the key point. And that kind of gives you, without saying jury trial demanded, a court of record requires a jury trial. But their brain said they don't really understand that. But you've put that information into the paperwork. You can press the issues later if they try to move towards summary judgment to throw you out.
Well, wouldn't you move it to federal court at some point?
If it's necessary. But first you have to go through the state court.
Right. So if they don't answer, in other words, she puts that in and they don't want to deal with it.
That court will answer. The thing is they may not answer the way you want it to answer.
Right.
That's the point.
And I just want to, for anybody who's listening, I got to say, the court access in the common law, while we were going through it, every bit and piece of it, I was actually writing my case along the lines with that, and then I completed it. I mean, there's still some odds and ends because I knew I wasn't quite ready. And I've been going up to the local courthouse, and I had a connection up there, and she showed me how to use the computers, and I was able to look up cases that are filed by attorneys and look at their style and everything, and it's really so empowering. It has been, and it is still so empowering, that when I look at the case, how you taught us to write it using the book and your class, that I go, oh my gosh, my paper looks exactly like this. I mean, there's differences, obviously, but I just feel so blessed that we got to take this course, and I just have so much more confidence because of your teaching, and then comparing it with what they're doing as attorneys, it's just a gift. Thank you all so much.
Well, they used to call us attorneys, and they used to insist that we must have attorneys writing this stuff for us. Remember, John? They did. Who's your attorney? You didn't write this yourself, did you? Where'd you get this stuff? Because they figured there was some attorney out there that they could hang.
Yep. Yeah.
It's
so
demanding to identify the juries behind the paper, I guess. Yep. But I just want to put an announcement out there. If there's any lawyers out there listening in, bar attorneys, if there's any paralegals out there listening, and if you've come frustrated with the system and you realize it doesn't work and you've left the system and you'd like to work with us, we really need some help, because we need people that can assist people in different ways. But we do need people who understand due process. But those people, I'll give them free access into the course so that they can get the common law side of things, And with their knowledge of due process, their experience in the court, and then the knowledge of the common law, realizing that the Bar Association has destroyed our judiciary and the judiciary is in trouble as far as trying to, they've closed the courts of justice. The doors of justice are not open in our courts. But we're going to open them sooner or later. It's just a matter of time. But we can use, we do need help from people who understand due process. We need help, a lot of help. So if anybody can give that, just send your information to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. Let us know, and then I'll get back to you.
Okay. So on the other thing, so we have a small group of us that one of them got pulled over for no turn signal, doesn't have a driver's license, and so he's not studied with NLA, but he's educated, so he used his own process to go to traffic court, and during the arraignment, he said things, he did things, and then they said, okay, well, fine, we're going to move this arraignment to another day. So three times this happens, or it's happened two times, and then the third time, he's still going into the courts. We went up and watched it, and judge, you know, of course, we lost count every time of how many times they said, you need an attorney, right? And in the long run, though, she gets all three times extremely frustrated and raising her voice and all of this stuff. And then on this third attempt to arraign him, she finally says, well, I'm just going to enter a plea for you. And he said it, but I think we all said it. I object. And she's like, oh, well, okay, fine, you know. And then
don't they have only like 45 days to arraign after a charge, or they got to let you go?
So there was a couple other people watching this, and the public defender, he had a big smile on his face kind of watching these shenanigans. So then the judge, you know, the quote judge, she's all, well, kept repeating, well, you need to get an attorney. You're wasting our time. And that, those were her only threats that she kept throwing at this friend of ours. So she finally says that she's going to give him yet another date and another opportunity to, you know, go through this. And because he had filed motions, but he didn't know that he needed to file a hearing of motion and then a hearing.
Notice of motion, right.
Notice of motion, right. So he didn't do all that. She kept telling him that, but... I mean, it was just, it's interesting. So he still hasn't been arraigned on this not having a driver's license. And then she's moving courts. So she says, well, I'm going to set it for 4 months from now because I won't be here.
She said that.
Oh yeah, God. She said it. And it was just like you all said, that when you know you're doing right, just got more frustrated.
Well, you know, they seem to know that they're trying to get jurisdiction over that person.
Well, he doesn't have a driver's license, so that's a big problem.
Right.
They're trying to get jurisdiction over him.
You know,
if he doesn't plead, they don't have jurisdiction.
And that's what we told him. Stick with jurisdiction. And then at that third, quote, to attempt to arraign him and get contract with him, he had papers ready saying that he was going to move it to federal court, and he served them right then and there in the courtroom. And and then they did their little show of muscles. In comes, because the sheriffs here are all for the courts, in comes one of the sheriffs with a gun on her hip. And we were already winding, he was already winding down and getting ready to leave. And then we go outside. When we left the courtroom, they had two other sheriffs with guns up there because they were getting ready to really show their muscle, you know. But it was very interesting. We would have all done it differently based on your taking your coursework. And it's been fascinating. We had another friend that we supported him, and he basically walked away, I think, eventually with a $100 fine for not having a driver's license, but just sticking to jurisdiction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's just an update, and I encourage anybody to go and spend time in the traffic court. Just go sit in there and watch it, because you get to see the circus and you start seeing what a hoax it is and what a setup it is. And once you get past that, those nerves, it's a lot more entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, again, you know, these people, as you know, don't have jurisdiction over you, and that's the key. And that's why they're trying to get, them to make a plea, because once you make the plea, now they feel comfortable because it's an EC Prius court and you now agree to the process.
Yep.
And if the judge tries to make the plea for you, well, then, you know, is the judge your lawyer? You know, that's kind of the question, really. But at that point, that's a violation, too, of course. They can't make a plea for you. You're not pleading. But in any event, they're trying to get jurisdiction.
Yeah.
All right, anything else?
Nope. And, I know one of the other friend that was up several months ago, the judge entered a plea for him guilty, and he wasn't aware enough to object. And then months later, we end up seeing the same public defender, and she actually said to this other friend of ours, I can't believe she entered a plea in for you. And even the public defenders were shocked, you know. And so we all know, you know, that, yeah, obviously you can't do that. You have to object, and then they back off. And so anyway, thank you very much. We appreciate you. And we're
well, the other thing you can do at that point, you know, the other thing you can do at that point is give a notice and demand to the judge or Wanto right there in the courtroom for them to give you the bonds and oath and then go through pursue the bond for the judge.
And couldn't he have said, after he said, I object to her entering a plea, I motion the court to dismiss this since the judge is practicing law from the bench or something like that?
Well, yeah, you can move the court to dismiss the case because they don't have jurisdiction. I'm not giving, you know, look at, you know what they're doing. And when they and some of these judges on the lower level realize, because I think they're being taught this now, and they may have been taught this for a while now, you got to get jurisdiction over the people. You know, that's why they keep having you come back and back over and over and over again. That's the key. But I think on the first time around, you got to let them know straight out, look, you don't have jurisdiction over me. You know you don't have jurisdiction over me. You're trying to get jurisdiction over me. I'm not going to give you jurisdiction. You're trying to hijack me into jurisdictions unknown. This court needs to be dismissed now. And see what happens, you know?
So anyway, we're learning a lot. We're sticking with it, and we appreciate you, and I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good call. Thanks. Okay, we'll go to the next person on the list here, and it is Dawn. Looks like Dawn. What state are you in, Dawn?
Oh, 1 second. Let me figure this out. What did I say?
We can hear you.
Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted. Yeah.
Okay, good. So I was like trying to figure out some. I'm in California, Southern California. I know it's a big state. Well, a couple things. I'm new to this group. Last week was my first time on this call. And I do have a friend that is going to court in Illinois. It's a judicial court, and she went there to get the judge's oath and bond, and they wouldn't give it to her, you know. And then they sent an officer who then had his hands in his pocket and was like asking, why do you need this oath and bond? And I guess she has to go to Springfield now or something because they just gave her this circle jerk and told her she had to send an email. But I think she's going to go to Springfield to get it, you know?
Well, look, an oath and bond, they are required to give it to you. They all run from it and they hide from it because they know what you're doing. They don't want you to hit their bond up because that's going to affect them financially. And they know they're doing wrong also. And so, you know, it's a stupid question, why are you doing it? But the bottom line is the law requires it. That's why I'm doing it. You know, I know we wrote up a paper on our course in there on that. And, you know, of course, we have two ways to go about asking for the oath and bonds. You definitely want to put it on, if you're writing a case and you're going into court, automatically I now add certain papers into the court, which is the law of the case. And on the law of the case, it's a requirement, it's a judicial notice for all the officers in the court to submit and put onto the record their oath, their bonds, and financials. Now, they ignore that, okay? And if you're starting to see a problem, then you want to do a demand in the court. You maybe do a quo warranto or a reminder of the notice and of the fact that you have already noticed them, of the judicial notice in your papers. If you're in the court and the court is moving and you have a problem, then you can just demand the oath and bonds right in the court. Now, of course, they're going to give you I'm in federal court right now on a case. I demanded the oath and bonds on two different occasions, once in the original paperwork, because we know how corrupt the federal courts are, and the second one was a notice within the court, a reminder of the judicial notice that was in the original action that they are required to give the oath and bond. And then the judge makes an order and makes a decision and puts out an order and says, no, we deny it. So I'm going through the appeal process to pursue that because it's the law. They have to give it to us. Why do they have an oath? Why do they have a bond if they're not going to be held accountable? Okay? We're going to get this judge. We're going to hold this judge accountable. We're going to the appellate court right now. We're working the papers now to run that through the appellate. But that's, you know, again, they're as corrupt as anything else. We're making a record. You know, the case is a lot more than just going into open time. There's a whole bunch of other things going on in this case. So we do plan, if we don't get it, we're also trying to get it moved into the state court because, you know, they take care of their own up in the federal courts. So we're trying to push it back into the state court. And we're probably going to end up going to the United States Supreme Court with that. And so I'll be working with Robert Schultz from We the People because he's got experience with that to see how we can get this case into that if we have to go there. There is a chance we could win on the appeal because we have a very powerful case and they have to go up against the Constitution. They have comity, which is really they just use court cases to make their case or they'll use codes. Which has nothing to do with We the People. You know, our case is completely 100% constitutional. You know, articles within the Constitution. We're looking for the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Seventh Amendment. But those are the positions that were taken. So it's going to be very hard for an appellate court to make the denial because now we're going to force them. If they're going to make the denial, well, give us the details. How is it you came to that decision? That's going to be an impossibility. But, you know, again, these courts, they do whatever they want to do. And on this side of devolution, it's really tough to get any justice in the courts at all.
I just have one last question. Do you know how to get your CUSIP account number?
Well, that's a dangerous thing to play around with. The last person I know that was successful with that, they got about $100,000. They cashed the check. 30 days later, they broke down his doors to arrest him. He happened to not be home at the time, and he's been on the run ever since. I heard from this guy a couple of times off the road, but then I haven't heard from him in years now. So if you're going to go for your SESQ account, they put that together. That was an appeasement back to the legislators. Well, okay, you do this, you do that. We'll give you these accounts, and each one has a value. You'll be able to do this, do that with it. But they don't let you do this or do that with it. And what happens is when you die, then they settle it, and probably Federal Reserve probably gets it, the monies, however they work that out. But it's too dangerous to go through pursuing that.
Yeah, well, the reason why I was trying to get it is was to put it on a tax form, which is the 8281. I've been following videos from Gene Keaton, and
mess around with that. There's a lot of garbage on the internet. We spent quite a bit of time trying to figure this out. When we first started to get into this, look, we were looking for a political solution, so we were looking through the committee man process. Started to run into some problems and different things and learning different things, and then we started to get into the legal side of things and saying, well, okay, we need to find out what's going on, maybe deal with this in the courts. And, of course, we learned that the courts aren't as corrupt as the political process. But the bottom line is we were learning from a lot of different people online, so we understand all these accounts, the SESQ accounts. We know about the sovereign thing and all. You know, we were into that. I mean, putting your declaration in your county and in the records, the county records, and so on and so forth. But all of that, none of it really works. People are out there talking about success. I don't believe any of it anymore. The bottom line is let's deal with it with the real law. Let's go to the law. Let's take the Constitution. Let's take common law. Let's call the problem what it is. It's a fraud. And let's deal with it from the perspective of the fraud. And that's how we deal with our legal system. We go right head on. And, we bring up things that they can't defend against. Their responses are ridiculous. It's absurd. So on paper, they're dead in the water on paper. But unfortunately, the judges go with the status quo, maintain you know, to protect the corporations, protect the federal, different federal agencies, especially the IRS, which is not a federal agency at all anyway. But in any event, they're protecting it all. But, you know, what we're doing is really making a record, because we expect to get justice on the other side of devolution. And that'll definitely come, no doubt, without any doubt anymore, by the end of this year, maybe before. But as soon as Trump gets into office, devolution will be 100% in play. But I think it's going to happen before that.
Well, John, my problem is the IRS sent me an invoice trying to tax me on a lawsuit against Chrysler, and the amount that they're taxing me is half the amount that I won in the lawsuit, which is just beyond ridiculousness.
That's what
they
get. That's what they get if you have no deductions. They get half.
Yeah, and so, like, I was trying to, like, file a 1099 OID and then back it up with an 82. These are all IRS forms, an 8281. And in the IRS form, and their instructions clearly state to put your CUSIP number down, that I don't even know what my CUSIP number is.
I'm going to tell you how to deal with this, okay? Well, first of all, when did they start pursuing you? When did you get your first letter?
So, like, last year I got the first letter, and I just ignored it, you know, because I thought, well, I'm just going to ignore it.
Okay, so when did they send you the second notice?
I just got the second notice, like, the third week in February.
Okay, listen, what they do, everything they do is form letters, okay? Depending on the category, what they're chasing, who you are, there's a certain set of form letters they direct towards you. And they'll send you form letter number one, form letter number two, form letter number three. What they're doing at this point is building a case against you. You are acquiescent. You're giving in to them. Because when they send you something and you don't respond, you just acquiesce to them, okay?
Right.
And they keep doing this over and over and over again. At some point now they come out after you. So what I would do if I were you is respond to this particular paper, whatever it is that they're asking from you, and say, well, hey, look, I don't understand this. I don't have the details. I need you to give me a proof of claim. So ask for a proof of claim. Put a proof of claim in the envelope. Send it back with them. You can go up online. Just go out and search on your search engine for Form 4490, F-O-R-M. 4490. And we have them on our website too. Then you could just download that form. Now you write your letter back, and you do this in an affidavit form. You say you're concerned with this letter that there's a tax to be paid here. You want to pay any lawful tax that has to be paid. Please fill out this form and give me that proof of claim, and then we can talk about it. They're not going to fill that paper out because it's an affidavit form and it never happens. And in order to make it lawful, that federal agency, which is no federal agency at all anyway, is supposed to take that form 4490, which is a sworn affidavit, file it in the court, in the federal court district, take it into the system, give you a due process, then they take a lien against you, then they come take your stuff. But they bypass all of that because you acquiesce and people don't understand. Then they bring you into a court called the Title 26 court, okay, which is a tax court, which is no court at all. It's a facade, just like the Federal Reserve. But the point is this. If you send a letter in and you respond, they're going to ignore you. They're probably going to ignore you. They're going to have to go do something a little different with you. And then they'll look for another form to send out. It may take months to do. So you send something in now. It'll probably take them 3-4 months before you hear back from them. You'll send in another paper. It'll probably take them another 2 or 3 months. Devolution will be at play. The Federal Reserve will be gone next year. That's the fact of the matter. Devolution, once that's done, then we're back to the law. If devolution doesn't play out, then we'll be in the streets with a big problem. But it is going to play out.
Okay, that's good advice. I appreciate that.
All right, 4490, that's the key.
I wrote it down.
Yeah, they will not fill that out. And you might even, you know, they're going to scratch their head. It's going to be, they're going to have to go up to their, you know, their managers or, you know, the authority above them, and they're going to have to figure out what to do with you and what the next form is. You know? But don't play with those other forms that they have, and don't play with this SQ. You're only acquiescing.
I got you, and I'm going to take your class regardless, because I think being new to all this stuff, the class is just going to help me down the road, and I have to educate myself. And I talked to my girlfriend, too, and I told her she needs to sign up for the class.
Well, Jefferson said if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And what he was talking about was the law. Tie them down with the chains of the Constitution, and the Constitution is the law. And that is the foundation of our law is the Declaration of Independence, which is a covenant with God to go under God's law and receive His blessings. The Constitution starts off in the preamble of the Constitution. One of the six requirements of all of the government agencies is to secure the blessings of liberty. That's right in the beginning. Okay, then you have your Bill of Rights, which again is unalienable rights, comes from God. The whole thing comes from that process, okay, which is everything ultimately the law of God. And that's where you have to rest, and that's what you have to learn, and people have to learn that. You have to learn the court process, because if you understand the court process, how the forms work with paperwork, how to make the papers, how to put them in, and you understand how that all works, and you understand the Constitution, and you understand common law. Common law is simply common sense. It's just a collection of maxims, things that no one can disagree with. You know, water doesn't run uphill. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. You know, all these are just maxims. You can't argue with these things. Innocent until proven guilty. That's a common law maxim. You know, in order for you to be guilty of, if you, let's say you were to accidentally murder someone, in one way, you know, one way or another, you ended up killing someone. Well, they have to prove intent. If there's no intent, there is no crime. You see, this is common law. It's very simple. You could figure this out just on pure logic. That's how common law is. Everybody knows what a crime is. God said He put it into our hearts. You know, don't kill, no, don't steal, and so on and so forth. It's very simple. So people need to know common law. They need to know court process. They need to know how to defend themselves. People should learn this in school. And that's one of the things, one of the duties of the Committee of Safety is to seize control of the school system in all the school districts within your county and bring them back into a proper education. Our children should learn how to handle a weapon. They should learn how to drive at the appropriate ages, of course. They should learn how to access a court. They should learn what common law is. They should know what their civics duties are. They should know about how the political process works and that we're a republic and not a democracy. They need to know all these things, and that's what this course teaches. So, you do good if you get into the course.
Yeah, I'm going to get into the course. I have one more problem in my life. Sorry, I feel like I have a lot of problems. I was injured at work. It's going to be 2 years in June. I've been trying to get my work comp claim approved. I'm like, we're in the appeal process, and it actually was a pretty bad injury.
You're in an administrative process, and that's the problem. You know, what happens is people succumb to that whole thing. They agree to it, and they move into the thing. I wouldn't do that, but I don't know where you're at with that, you know, but moving it into a proper place is better. I know with an individual, I was helping them way back when, and I was a contractor at the time, and I went in to talk with the people to lay out certain things, and I had a little bit of knowledge, but I didn't really have much knowledge of the law. But we did get things done where this woman did get the appropriate things, but she was permanently disabled. They just wanted to give her a few bucks, but no, we had to really reform her whole house, because now she was in a wheelchair and she couldn't, you know, her house had to be adjusted so that she could live in that house. So you could push it, and I would push it through the law. I wouldn't go through the administrative courts. I'd go through suing directly in a court.
Well, I have an attorney, and they finally hired an attorney that, if you saw the movie Silkwood, where Karen Silkwood got poisoned by plutonium, same damn thing happened to me. And unfortunately, my longevity is probably not going to be here for very long because you end up dying of cancer. It destroyed my DNA, and it's destroyed my entire body. But I'm trying to be positive about the situation. They just hired an attorney that understands nuclear. I mean, Jerry Spence, I have two attorneys. Jerry Spence was Karen Silkwood's attorney. I talked to Jerry for 5 weeks, and we're in the process of suing the plant, but that's like a couple of years. But I'm dealing with work comp, and when you have an injury of this level, like, you have to do IVs every single freaking week, and they're expensive. You know, it's like $10,000 for every 4 weeks. And I've been shelling out my own money trying to keep myself alive. And I'm just frustrated.
For 2 years?
This June is going to be 2 years. This June coming up, you know.
Now the compensation is administrative court. Are they taking this into the regular court system, the state court, to sue?
Well, I'm with Workman's Comp, and it's in appeals court right now with Workman's Comp.
That whole thing is just a fraud in itself because they're so limited.
It's like a scam to me.
It is. It's so limited. But the thing is your lawyer's taking it into regular state court to sue them.
Well, I have two attorneys because...
Why are you with state court?
Well, I have two attorneys because Workman's Comp is a certain type of attorney. And then for the utility where I got injured at is a different, like Jerry Spence sent me over to Bruce Cutter up in Oakland because the utility where I got poisoned at is in a town called Sunol, California. It's Northern California. So Celine is Bruce's daughter. She's hired an environmentalist engineer. She's hired a nuclear engineer. They're doing soil samples. Long story short, a lot of people got sick, and utility had to sell because people were getting sick. And so now a full-fledged outfit owns the utility. But it's the very first nuclear plant ever built on the globe. It's called Vallecitos Nuclear.
This is something that people need to deal with. The people don't realize how dangerous these nuclear plants are. They are serious. People don't realize that Three Mile Island almost took out the entire Northeast. The entire Northeast and all the way up to Canada and down into Virginia and heading out well past Pennsylvania. The entire Northeast was at jeopardy with Three Mile Island. And that took place, I think, was in the 80s or the 90s. I forget exactly when. Okay. Nobody really understood how bad it was until years after. And this guy did a documentary on this thing, and they revealed what really took place, what really happened, what almost happened. Completely to take out the entire Northeast. If that thing would have went the way that it was heading, and the people that were running that thing, if it continued on that path, we would not be New York. It would not be livable. Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Connecticut, all of the Northeast would be unlivable. There would be no Northeast. That's how serious it is. Look what happened to Russia. Look what happened to Japan. Okay, you know, are we crazy? Are we insane? We the people need to do something about this, and we can't do anything until we take our country back, and of course that's what we're working on. But as far as what you're involved with right now, okay, you need to get this into state court. But let me ask you, the key thing is that you have DNA damage, correct?
I got so much damage, it's beyond, but it's in my blood, it's in my organs. My extremities, I'm going to be 58 this this year. My extremities cramp up. I lose my vision sporadically. Like, I could be, like, in the house. I could be driving a car, and then, bam, the vision goes, and I got to stop doing whatever I'm doing, you know? And then it'll be like that for as long as my vision has gone out has been at least 2 straight hours. You know, I got migraines. When I do the IVs, because they're pulling all the toxic waste through my body, I'm in a lot of pain for about 2 days. It melted my L4, L5 spine. I'm no longer allowed to sit down. I stand up all day long. It calcified my right kidney. It calcified my lymphatics in my right glutes. You know, like, I'm 58 years old. I now have neuropathy. 2 months ago, the bone in my foot, it's called the metatarsal, just came straight out of place. You know, my doctor's telling me some very encouraging facts that, Dawn, your body is just decomposing. And I'm like, that's super encouraging. You know, I feel really good about that. You know, so.
Hold on. The med beds can't do anything for her, can they?
Yeah, they can. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the med beds would help me.
They would, no doubt about it. You know that.
How do they expect to release that to the people?
I mean, well, it's going to be the people that have like what she has that basically it's terminal. They get first dibs, and there's going to be a whole thing they're going to release on that. Maybe if I get news on it when it comes in, I could send it over to you. There's, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, is when they're sucking, they're doing chelation, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's usually what new plants do.
Well, that's the regular doctors doing that, though. That's an MDs, right?
Well, so.
Is it an alternative chelation, or is it something
that's alternative? It's EDTA. And I do an immune drip because I don't have an immune system anymore. So I do a 25 milligram vitamin C immune drip that has magnesium and B complex in it. I do that every single week. But the chelation destroyed my liver. So now I can only do chelation once a month. I was doing chelation every single week, but when your liver gets damaged, it feels like it's burning in the inside of your body. Like,
if the chelation goes wacko. The chelation shouldn't destroy your liver unless you're doing it too fast. In other words, if you're pulling out more than you can eliminate, then you reabsorb the poison.
I'm a small person. You know, I'm like 5'4". And I'm 115 pounds, and when you got a nuclear waste plant inside your body and you're trying to push it through a small liver, like I did for a year and a half, I did chelation every single week. Now next week, I do my challenge test. Hopefully, I'm not still in the category of organ failure, because this whole time, since June 2nd of 2022, I've been in the category where my organs can start shutting down. And the chelation every week was causing my C-reactive proteins to go through the roof, which means you're going to have a heart attack. The minute I stopped the chelation, I stopped it for 3 months, blood work came back normal. And so I was like, okay, fine, I'll just do the chelation once a month, because I'm a small person, like, I don't have any fat on my body to start with, you know, it's just too much.
You've got to be very careful with whatever you do. And well, there's other alternatives, you know, I don't know that you need to do chelation, you know what I mean? It's just one tool in the tool chest. I would look into MMS, and I would look into homeopathy to see what kind of relief you can get there. you know, and like John said, the med beds will absolutely redo the DNA, right down to the DNA.
Yeah, let me ask you, Dawn, let me ask you, are you coming to our Monday night programs regularly or occasionally or what?
Well, she's been out because they couldn't, you know, with the Maui thing.
No, no, she's not in Hawaii. You're not in Hawaii.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the other lady. I'm sorry.
I think you're in California, right?
Yeah, Southern California.
I'm in Southern California.
So, but have you been coming? You just found us, I think, right?
Yeah, because I bought the UCC book, and your website was on the back of it because I've been reading UCC codes, you know, and this is my second week attending your call. As soon as I read that book, I flipped it over, I saw your website, bam, got right on it, you know.
Well, that's kind of lucky. In this. The guy who wrote that book stole my work, and he stole something that I may have had some older stuff where he probably may have pulled it, but he stole some work. Matter of fact, he's in jail for other things, he's under fraud, but he's selling my book online. That book is not mine, but he did put the website in there because my other books had the website in there, and he put the website onto that book, I guess, so you're here. But we don't push forward on dealing with you know, the problems in the court, like, you know, the man on the land kind of stuff. We go straight for the fraud. But let's go back to your problems and your situation. You know, as soon as we hear anything about the med beds, you definitely know we'll be talking about it here. So if you kind of keep up on things with us, you'll hear about it when it happens. And maybe you'll hear on your own also. But the thing I'm concerned with, if this happened 2 years ago, where is your lawyer in the court? What's going on with that? I mean, have you been in the state court for 2 years making this battle?
I've been doing this battle for 2 years. It's still like in pending status. I mean,
you got to get a new lawyer then. The lawyer is a problem because, look, if you have an emergency situation, time is of the essence. You can't sit.
I know.
And I'll tell you right now, going through the administrative court to compensation, you're not going to get nowhere with that. And then what they're going to do to you, you're going to have to sign off the papers at the end, and you better be really careful because you're going to sign all of your rights away at that point and have no access to be able to go back into the regular court. And I don't know if your two lawyers are talking to each other because your lawyer on the state court doesn't understand how the compensation process works. And the guy in the compensation process, he's had a special course. He's not even a real lawyer. He's a lawyer for the compensation and understands that part of the process. And he doesn't know how the law courts work. And you're going to get hurt on this if these two guys aren't communicating, number one. Number two, if you have a situation where time is of the essence and you're 2 years in a court and then you haven't gotten anywhere with it yet, you got a problem with your lawyer. Okay, and the status quo is what they want to maintain. The courts want to maintain and keep this as long as possible, hoping that you're going to die to begin with. Okay, because they're servicing really the agency that's involved in this, or the corporation, or whatever the case may be. They're maintaining the status quo protection, and your lawyer serves the court before they serve you, and you have to understand that. And once you understand that, it's time to push that lawyer. Or get a new lawyer. And I don't think you want to even bother pushing him anymore. I don't know where he's at, so I don't know.
He's in the work comp one's in Fresno, which they just hired the new gal that's taken my case. And I had a conversation with her 2 weeks ago, and I told her, I'm coming to see you in Fresno because I'm a real person, and you're going to meet me, and I want to see my freaking file. And you better read through all the subpoenas that you guys have issued, and I want answers to what we're doing.
They need to notify the court that this needs to proceed with speed, that this is a special situation. There is a time limit here. They can't sit up. You got to get a lawyer who's a lion, number one, and is going to really represent you. That's a difficult thing to do because most of these lawyers are just BS. To be honest with you, and they're all in it for the money. They don't care about you, and they play ball with the courts, with the status quo as much as the courts do. They're obedient to the judge, and they pledge allegiance to them more than they pledge allegiance to you. This is the problem we have. Bar attorneys are snakes, and this is the problem. But you got to push them somehow, and And you should want to see the entire file. You want to see all the paperwork. Where have you done? What work have you done so far? How come we're not moving in the courts? Blah, 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 blah. You want to be at every hearing, okay? Every hearing you want to be there. And you want to ask questions about these hearings. Take the course, like you said, and then you start asking questions. And you want to know what's going on. But anyway, that's all we can do for you now. And as soon as we hear on MMS is something I was thinking of also. Gerard brought it up. I don't know if that would be helpful, but he says that it might be helpful if you're familiar with MMS. We do have information on MMS if you're not.
Yeah, someone sent me some information on it. So I haven't tried it yet, but I am familiar with it.
You got to be real careful with it because you could react to it. You have to go slow. You got
to
build
up. You have to dilute it, right?
You got to dilute it, and you got. There's many ways to take it. Like you can not only can you dilute it, you can do it. You know, once a day, twice a day, whatever works for you. So you want to start out with like one drop, just one drop a day, and mixed in, you know, in your dilution, in your dose cup, and don't go up at all for a while. You know, see what happens. And then once you get going, you start improving a little bit, you feel better, then you can go up to two drops. We have all the protocols on our website that Humble wrote and different people. There's many different protocols, so you can tailor it to your tolerance, so to speak. Okay? Don't go crazy with it because you'll get a Herkimer reaction and it will not be fun. You won't
yeah.
be... You know, but it does miracles. It really does because it really gets rid of the bad cells. You know, you lost that what do you call it? Apogee, the thing that tells the mutated cell to die. Instead of dying, it's living and it's sucking energy out of you. And MMS actually kills those cells, and it does it in a way. That's actually gentle because what it does is it strips out a molecule, blows a hole in it. And once it blows a hole in that cell, then what happens is the immune system that you have left eats those pieces and it educates the immune system. You know what I'm saying? Because they cannot get to, the cancer cells all have like a coating around them. It's a defense against your immune system. Once the MMS blows a hole in it, and the pieces go out into the bloodstream, now your microphages can eat them. They can't eat them right now. They can't see them. They don't recognize them, okay?
MMS also doesn't kill the good bacteria or the flora.
Right, right. It also has to do with the charge of the cells, negative, positive. That's all in the books. You should read up on it, all of it, before you start it even. You should just make sure that you understand how it works and what your options are for using it.
Do you see our desktop, Dawn?
What's that?
Dawn, do you see our desktop?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, if you can see the desktop, I have one.
Yes, I see. It says health issues.
Okay, come down to health issues. That's where you'll find all the information we're talking about. Dr. John Bergman is a good place to get some information. I don't know if he can deal with the problems you have, but certain problems I know he can. You know, he's detailed in things. This guy has solved all my problems. I had quite a few of them a few years back. Okay. Also, you'll watch these videos. Most of this is about cancer. Okay. And down here is where the protocols are that Gerard was talking about on the MMS stuff. So we have everything. I think we have something up here in where you can order it. They keep putting people in jail that are selling this. I know the last guy that was selling some really good stuff in glass bottles, and it is really well put together compared to the plastic bottles, which deteriorate pretty quickly. I bought quite a few of them, and the plastic bottles eventually all broke. They just broke up, and that was that. But the glass bottles last forever. But also, I don't know, B17 is not going to help her. Do you think... Do you think that could help her, Gerard, B17?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't.
Okay, well, anyway, we have videos on B17. We have videos on all this stuff, cancer. And then there's a store where you can buy a B17 if you wanted to get that. And these videos would be very helpful for you. So, But with that, we've got to move on, and we'll look forward.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't even know you had that section on your website. So appreciate it.
John, Jim Humble's book is available as a PDF downloadable. I would highly recommend that she get that. Are you in California, Don?
Yeah, I'm in Orange, California.
Okay. Is your email up to date and your my account? If it is, I'll go ahead and send you the link.
Yeah, the email showing in under my name is correct.
Okay, good. I'll send that out to you.
Also, thank you. I appreciate it.
I just ordered some yesterday. I can send you a link to order it, too.
Okay, good. Hey, send me a link, too, because I know the guy I was buying from, it, he went to jail.
Okay.
But anyway, Dawn, he'll send you the info. There's great info here on this page. You've got a lot of stuff to look through. As soon as we hear anything about the med beds, we'll be talking about it. And if anyone out there hears anything about the med beds, let us know. So, okay. We'll talk to you again, Dawn. Thanks for the call. Did I lose you? I think she's muted.
Thank you. I just muted. I didn't want to have my microphone on if you're bringing someone else on the call.
All right. Well, we'll move
on.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Dawn. All right. All right, we'll take our next caller. Looks like, let me push that button. Hold on. Right again. Sheila, you got the mic? What state are you in?
Hi, Alabama.
Sheila from Alabama. Go right ahead.
Yeah. I'm involved in a suit with a default judgment on a credit card. And I filed an answer and affirmative defenses denying each and every material allegation and demanding strict proof thereof, and listed several affirmative defenses. And I also filed a separate notice that I am not submitting or consenting to the jurisdiction of the court, and that I am not the straw man, that I am not one in the same with...
What court?
Circuit Court in Alabama, which is the first... We have the small claims in the district, and then the circuit court is for general jurisdiction things. So they...
I want to make sure you open the court of record there, and that's how you deal with that. And it's difficult to hold, it's difficult to open up, and it's difficult to maintain because they'll try to keep pushing you back to the civil law, because they're operating under chancery. That's what's going on.
And yes.
So, but yes. You got to be careful on how you deal with these people. Don't get lost in the man on the land stuff. Use the law, and use the fact that laying it out as gentle as you possibly can. The fraud that whole process is.
Okay. You want to see the contract with your wedding signature. They can't.
Yes, I requested all of that. The plaintiff did not respond with any.
They don't have it. That should be the end of it right there.
But unfortunately, they did not offer any witnesses. I thought it was a hearing on the motion to dismiss. I requested a jury trial, demanded a jury trial in my answer and affirmative defenses. So the judge never said anything but denied my request for jury trial. We were at the hearing on what I assume was the hearing on the motion to dismiss. Same day he entered an order in the plaintiff's favor, even though they offered no evidence, they offered no witnesses. They did introduce, I think there were four or five billing statements, but from my research I understand that those are not considered real evidence. It's not a true bill. So if you exclude those, they offered no evidence. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did you appeal that decision?
No, I haven't. I'm at that stage now for doing an appeal, and I'm already a little over a week into the time to appeal. But I'm also on a very limited income, and so listening, reading some of the little booklets, and then I got connected with y'all. This is my first call also, And I'm thinking that maybe the way to go would be a writ quo warranto or a writ of mandamus or both.
Sheila, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, listen. First of all, you must realize they're railroading you. The fact that the judge is ignoring you and moving on, letting things go, is because they figure you don't know what you're doing. Now, you're saying you're appealing. What are you appealing? And who are you appealing?
The judge is ruling.
Yeah, the judge ruled against me and in favor of the plaintiff, even though they submitted no evidence.
Are you saying the case is over, according to them?
According to them, yes.
Saying you have to pay money and that's that?
Yes.
Okay, what you need to do is sue them for denial of due process. That's what you have to sue them for. When you demanded a jury trial, a jury trial is an unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment. Go look at the Seventh Amendment very carefully, and it's very clear in there. It's common law. So you want a common law jury. When any judge denies you a jury, and where you have the right of a jury, anything over $20, you have the right of a jury. So they cannot deny you. That's an unalienable right. That's what you will win on. And if you have to, you could move it into the federal court as a federal issue and make a demand for that court to cease and desist. And also, as far as, well, once they deny your due process, you can also look for damages at the same time.
You know, not answering her request for a contract, a web ink signature.
Not a Seventh Amendment issue. She'll win on the Seventh Amendment issue. It's the most powerful issue you can have, from what I heard you talking.
Yeah, you don't want to give them something else to hang your hat on.
Okay, so just ignore the appeals process and sue them. Sue the judge?
No. You want to appeal on a Seventh Amendment position.
Appeal.
Or you want to move it into federal court for denial of due process. That's what I would do. I don't know if you're able to do that, if you understand the due process. Have you taken our course? Or it sounds like you've got some knowledge here, but what kind of knowledge do you have concerning due process?
Well, I do have some knowledge, but I've been out of it for over 20 years, almost 25 years.
Okay,
and
well,
so
if you've got some reasonably, you know, framework understanding of what's going on here, just reasonable, then you should take the course, the court access and the common law. It's a 90-hour course, and you should be able to go through that in 2 or 3 weeks if you've got a basic background, if you got the time to buckle down to do 40 hours a week or 30 hours a week. You can get through it in 2 or 3 weeks. But if you've got the basic structure and you just got to get that refreshment and get your missing links that you're missing, maybe you've got spots that you don't understand, you take the course, you'll get all that put together, and then you'll be able to represent yourself and move your case into federal court for cause. You should be able to move it to federal court for cause quite quickly, you know, once you get involved in the course, because, you know, through the first 20 or 30 hours, it's probably enough at that point to at least start writing your papers and moving it. So, but again, it depends on how much knowledge you've got concerning all this stuff.
Well, obviously, I'm really rusty in anything, because I wrote down that you said sue them for denial of due process, but then you said that means to appeal the case that exists now.
You move it into federal court for denial of due process. It becomes it's a constitutional issue now.
Okay, so I don't appeal to the Alabama Appeals Court to review the judge's actions in light of the fact that he denied my request for jury trial. He entered an order even though they presented no evidence and no testimony. I also asked the judge to grant post judgment relief to vacate and set aside his order as void, and he denied that 7 minutes later from the time I filed it with the court.
That is telling us that the court is maintaining status quo automatically. They're doing it blatantly, and I could see the railroad, okay? You're being railroaded. So with that said, I don't think you're going to get anywhere in the appeals court, okay? And I would move it to federal court for cause and try to get the case thrown out. You have to be careful, because when you go into federal court, you can't discuss any issues other than the violation. And the violation is the violation of due process. I wanted a court of record, which is a court according to the course of the common law, or a court by jury. It's all the same thing. That's what you were looking for. That's the case you're going to make. They denied me that. They denied me my due process of law, which is secured by the Constitution, particularly in the Bill of Rights, number 7, okay, Amendment number 7. You should win in federal court very quickly. Your wherefore clause should be very simple for that court to cease and desist, okay? Now, at that point, I wouldn't make it too difficult by trying to sue the court, to sue them in that court. I would then go back and go for bonds. Once you have that court case thrown out for denial of due process, you have an injury that you can go pull the bond and deal with the bonding company to get compensation. That's what I would do.
So don't do a writ quo warranto at this point.
No.
Okay. How do I move it into federal court? What steps do I take?
Well, again, that's why you should go in and do the course. Basically,
you have the steps in the course to move it, don't you?
Exactly. We have
that's
all
in the course.
Okay. I signed up for the course, and I've listened to the first section, the introduction, and two sessions. So there's one more part of the introduction. Yesterday, I downloaded and read a bunch of the materials that's together with the course. So it took me all day to read through a bunch of the materials, but
yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
I've done that.
But basically, remember, you review through everything, you go through everything. Repetition is the key to all success and knowledge. So you want to be repetition about it, go over and over and over. But the bottom line is all this material is used. You use this as reference, because once you have the basic knowledge, you go to reference back, go here, go there, go different places. Let me just throw up on the table here, education, court access, and the common law, and the table of contents. The table of contents, which has all of the different documents. Okay, once you've gone through all this and you're listening to the video, you can also download the audios and put them, because you already watched the video, now you get the audios. Again, repetition is the key if you want to be good at this. And then as you go through this, all of this is available. Also, it's in the book, too, but it's all available as a reference point. As you get to a certain thing, you're doing a pleading, so you go over the pleadings and you see how the summons is set up, how to put the court case together. We have in here how to move it to federal court for cause, and we're very specific. If you bring up one issue that the federal court cannot hear, one issue, they're going to throw your whole case out. So you got to be careful. You're there for due process and due process only. Your wherefore clause is to have that court case cease and desist and be dismissed. Okay? And then that is what the power and the authority you're going to use as you pursue, as I said, you're going to pursue their bonds, both in bonds, and then you're going to get compensation through that.
Now, I understand what you're saying about the Seventh Amendment and the jury. I also contested jurisdiction, and part of my defenses was lack of personal jurisdiction, lack of subject matter. So don't bring those up.
Forget about it. If you bring it up, they're going to throw you out of federal court.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Federal court has one focus when you bring paper. They look for anything that they shouldn't have, and you're out of there.
Okay.
You're finished. They're not going to hear nothing. You have one issue and one issue open. Only the constitutional issue. That's the only jurisdiction they have, is the constitutional issue. It's a Seventh Amendment violation. It's an unalienable right. It's a denial of due process, and that's your case.
Okay.
Nothing else is your case.
I can do that.
Now, here, you can see here, let's see, jurisdiction challenge, IRS forms, attachments, exhibits.
Move for cause.
You see it?
Above forms.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here is your information right in here. Okay.
You should probably read that right away just so you get familiar with it.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's your solution there.
All right.
Keep it simple.
Okay.
And look at when you write your case, and we teach this in the course. When you write your case, okay, you make your point. If you have a particular law point and you want to expound upon it like the Seventh Amendment, you make your point, make it very clear, two or three sentences, keep it simple, refer to a memorandum, put a memorandum of law. We have memorandums of law in here you can even use, okay, on due process. I'm pretty sure we have one on due process. But you keep it simple. Also, you know, you want to use footnotes. You want to use as much footnotes as possible. The other thing in your footnotes, almost all of my footnotes comes from Black's Law or it comes from Brovier's. Okay, and I have a whole list of footnotes that you can click in on. Now, that I hadn't been doing, and I realize it's kind of a problem because they tried to supersede that with what's called comedy. Comedy is where they go and they look at trial court decisions and they'll try to apply trial court decisions on you, and they'll say, well, this is simple. This judge chose to go this way, which was unlawful anyway, probably. But so therefore, this court should also rule the same. Your position is a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. So it has nothing to do with you. Number one. Number two. Comedy is not law. Okay, what is law in common law is common law, ultimately, and the proper decisions of the United States Supreme Court or state Supreme Court. Okay, that's what you can use, and you're using it for law. But what I found out and realized is that whenever I quote, I also now quote, it came from Black's Law, it came from Brovier's Law, whatever it is, because that's the law now. That's the point. The case is given as an example of that law. And so you want to make those points inside your footnotes, okay?
Okay. And
so you want footnotes. You want to be minimum. On a case like this, shouldn't be any more than three or four pages. Maybe a memorandum attached and as much footnotes as you can get.
Okay. So I don't attach the case file, the record of trial.
No. Well, you the decision, but you're going to do an affidavit. And an affidavit is going to make the point of what took place in the trial, that you demanded a jury trial, they denied you that due process, and that's your point. Okay? And everything is simple. You get all the facts in there you can, but nothing more. Keep the facts, you keep everything minimum, but get all the facts in. So your affidavit shouldn't be any more than a page or two. Your paperwork shouldn't be any more than three or four pages. And if you put a memorandum in there, possibly a couple of pages, and that's it. Of course, you have to have the proper cover sheets and all the necessary forms in order to make the filing, and you'll find all that in there. I'm looking right now for footnotes. Let me see. Footnotes right here. If you click on footnotes, you can download it in a zip file. It's extremely helpful. Extremely helpful.
Okay.
I've been collecting footnotes ever since I started working in, researching the law. And so I got a lot in here. They're not in pretty, they're not put in there in any really pretty way, shall I say. I mean, I find some information, I just throw it into a case under a certain, whatever name I gave that file. Okay. When I find more information, I might throw some more information in there. So you might find five or six or seven things in there, and you choose one or two or three items you think you need out of that to make your point as far as your point of law is concerned.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Okay, with that, we got to
move. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless.
You too. Jeff, you got the mic. What state you're from? Hello, Jeff.
Oh, hey, John. This is Jeff in Pennsylvania. I'm also with the NLA prayer group.
Oh.
We meet on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of in a devastated state of mind here. So.
By the way, we're starting a study in the book of Matthew on Wednesday, if you want to join us.
Oh.
Wednesday at 7:30 Eastern, right here in this room. Book of Matthew starts this Wednesday.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
That's great.
What's your question or correction? Or?
Well, my question is, I do paralegal work. I help people out who are in legal difficulties. I've had some of your course. I've had computer problems, of course, gone over your materials. And I've got a situation here that sort of erupted today that it's sort of boggled my mind as how this could happen, but I have a family in western New Jersey who were illegally evicted from their home. He fell behind in a homeowners association dues. They came after him. They hit him with thousands of dollars in attorney's fees. He then filed bankruptcy, had these expunged. Then they came back with a second lawsuit.
What was expunged?
The past due homeowners fees that were owed. He was in an accident. He missed a couple of payments, and they came after him to foreclose on him. So he went into bankruptcy to get those debts.
Sounds like what would you call it? Let me think of the word here. Go ahead. I'll think of it as you go.
Discharged is the word. The debts were discharged.
Well, I was looking at vindictiveness is what I was looking for.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely, absolutely. Well, at any rate, they came after him a second time for attorney's fees, and actually false charges were there. I became involved in helping him with the paperwork. It went up to the they got a foreclosure. They had tacked on $67,000 in attorney's fees. And
a non-judicial foreclosure? What kind of foreclosure?
This was through the court in Sussex County.
Non-judicial foreclosures go through the court for the facade to make.
Yes, yes. Yes, they do.
Question is was it a facade, number one? What kind of a court is it? Was it an E.C. Prius court? Was it a civil law court? Was it an equity court? I doubt it was an equity court, but it might have been a civil law court. That's an unlawful court. Was it run under chancery? All this is unconstitutional. It has to be a court of law. And for them to take something away from you in a court of law, they need a jury. Did you get a jury?
No, you did not get a jury trial. Absolutely
well,
not.
The problem. That's part of the problem, and part of your solution is denial of due process.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's gone way past that, but I'll try to wrap this up quickly. We took this up to the state Supreme Court. They got a foreclosure. There was a fake sheriff sale that was held with no bids. His $650,000 home was sold for $100. We went to the state Supreme Court in Trenton, and we got a temporary stay order on any evictions. They came with the sheriff's department, and they came into the house, and they evicted his wife, himself, and his son illegally against the stay order. And they took all his property, threw it in storage, wrecked his property, wrecked his life. And then he started receiving, they moved him out of his house, and then he started receiving property tax bills and his water bills and everything else. And they, in the meantime, they had moved another family into his house. They were renting it out to someone else. And this was done by the homeowners association and this corrupt court. Now we filed a lawsuit in federal.
The sheriff actually threw you out?
Yes, the sheriff did this. Yep. The sheriff, I can give his name, but I'll leave it out for right now.
Well, you should. Well, that's a problem with that sheriff. But in any event, we'll lay that aside. Look at this situation here is really all about due process. You could prove fraud and everything else. They sold that home. That's a $650,000 home, I think you said. Truly value that, and they actually sold it for $100. They do this all the time. Okay.
They do.
Nobody comes. Only one person or two people will come, and they're all in the game. And it's just a matter of being sold. And at some point, a couple of years down the road, they'll move it to their true owner, who really will take control over it. And you know, they just made themselves $650,000. That's the game they play. So that you can, at $100, you can show fraud on that.
Well, yeah. And the other issue, of course, was the house remained in his name. There was no transfer of title. There was no sheriff's deed that was filed. There was nothing. The house remained in his name, and they just used it for profit-making purposes. So,
question as far as, I mean, it sounds like you know what you got to do, but you have a question or something with this?
Yeah, the question is, I wound up getting a lawyer who was, you may have heard of Neil Garfield. This is a guy known to Neil Garfield, the top of the line foreclosure attorney. We couldn't pay him, but he had another person come in. At any rate, we sued them in the state court in New Jersey, and then they came after the lawyer, and they had him suspended for 2 years because he had a complaint filed against him in Pennsylvania. It's like if I'm driving in Pennsylvania, I get a speeding ticket, and I go into New Jersey, they stop me and they give me another ticket because I got a ticket in New Jersey. Totally unbelievable. The lawyer can't do anything. And we found out today that all the papers he filed on this case were removed. Somebody took the papers to reinstate the case and for our lawsuit, and they expunged them from the record. I'm upset about it because I've worked with this case for a long time, and I've never heard of it. The clerk or somebody has messed with those court records, and I'm just flabbergasted.
Let's go back to the court case itself. Was there a jury?
No, not yet.
That right there is again coming to a violation of due process. Did he ask for a jury?
He did when he was a defendant. Yes.
Okay, and then they refused them?
Absolutely.
Due process. There you go. Move to federal court for due process and your wherefore clause. You're looking for them to cease and desist and throw the whole court case out. Why? Because they denied you your Seventh Amendment right. You denied you a right of due process protected by the Seventh Amendment. That's how you want to word it.
Yes.
I don't have constitutional rights. I have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. That's always the way you want to put the language in for that. And you got to be very careful with the language, because with language, you got to understand the jurisdiction, the game that they're playing, the words that they're using. In a court case that I'm doing right now, they constantly keep referring to my action at law as a complaint. And I keep correcting them. It is not a complaint. Complaint is, and I show them in Black's Law, I show them in Brovier's Law, complaint means a process of chancery, a chancery process where there's a chancellor in charge, in other words, a judge. But we don't have that going on here. I have an action at law. An action at law is one that proceeds according to the common law. You got to, every word in that court has a meaning. Remember that. And some of it is really tricky. So you really want to evaluate every word, every phrase, every sentence as you look at what you have to defend yourself against. But in any event, at this point, it looks like this guy could move it to federal court for cause, have everything overturned and thrown out because of denial of due process.
Yes, okay.
That's where I would go with it. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's helpful, John. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, good call. All right, let's take, what's that, Jose? What state you in? Is that your name, Jose?
Yes.
Okay, what state you in?
I'm in Michigan.
Okay, Jose from Michigan, go right ahead.
Okay, so I'm new to all this, this whole process of, defending myself. Back in January, I was at a restaurant, and some police had pulled up, and the situation escalated quickly, and I had pulled my phone out to record the police arresting somebody.
Yeah, they don't like that.
And they, they did not like that at all. And they actually, during the recording, on the playback, you can actually see that. They took forever not to even arrest the guy, and they actually started paying more attention to me than arresting the guy that they had on the ground. And they ordered me back, and then I just didn't do anything. I just sat silent and was, continued recording, and then they got more officers there, and then they ordered me back again, and then one officer pushed me back, and I said, "Whoa, you can't touch me. You can't put your hands on me." And then, long story short, I was arrested for failure to obey a lawful order, and then obstructing.
How close were you?
I was about 10 feet behind the officers when I was arrested.
And how far back did they want you to go?
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, how far back did they want you to go? 20 feet or something?
Well, they didn't specify. They just said, "Get back." and I just...
Well, you should have listened to that, so you may have a problem because they're in the process of arresting somebody and they want you to step back. You probably should have, whether you can... And then, of course, that escalated to another problem that you got. It's going to be difficult to win in court against that, just so you know.
Okay, well...
But again, what are they charging you with, and did they, and is there an indictment out for you?
They're charging me with failure to obey a lawful order of an officer and
is that obstructing. Criminal? Are they claiming that
they're misdemeanors? And so
okay, misdemeanor is still criminal. You still can face jail time. They claim misdemeanor
right.
In jail up to a year. So they claim, which is not true.
Right.
But that's what they claim, and that's what they do. Okay, so the point is this. Where do you have a lawyer?
No, I did not.
The point is this, and the question is this, and I don't think they're going to go get it, but you know, you could defeat it this way: is where is the indictment? You can't be brought into a criminal. They can't put a criminal charge against you and maintain that and go through the court without the indictment. They have to go to the people to get the will of the people. They have to put it before the feet of the people. Can we have this indictment against this individual? They say yay or nay, and that's it. And I don't think they're going to go to try to pursue an indictment for a misdemeanor because they love to be working this without indictments, and that may cause a problem for future cases. There could be a lot of things why they may not want to pursue it. So, but that's what you need to pursue. If they're going to take you into court with a potential jail sentence, where is my indictment? And again, if they refuse to give you that indictment, and if they want to move the court case along with it, move it to federal courts for cause with denial of due process.
Okay, so where I've gone so far is I've been arraigned, and it was on a Zoom thing, and it was actually interrupted.
Did you make a plea?
I did not make a plea, but the magistrate put the plea in for me, and
that's illegal. That's unlawful. Also, they can't make a plea. Okay,
right.
Let me ask another question.
I understand that now.
What court are you in?
Now. I didn't understand that at the time.
Hold on. What court are you in? Are you in a town court, village court, state court? What kind of a court?
61st District Court.
Okay, that sounds like something in the state, I guess. What state again?
State of Michigan.
Michigan. What county are you in?
Kent County.
How far are you from Barry County?
About 35 minutes north of Barry County, north and east.
We're going to have Sheriff Dar. Sheriff Dar is the sheriff of Barry County. We're going to have him online next Monday. He's going to be taking questions. So if you have a question, you can send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll be taking some questions for him. Now, we can't get too deep into cases like this or something, but the point I'm trying to make, if you're only 35 minutes from there, you might want to see if you can get an appointment with him and talk to him about it and ask him what he thinks, what could be done and where you're at. I don't know how helpful that could be, but it could be. I don't know the sheriff in your county, so Sheriff Dar may know him and know whether you can go talk to him. Well, why don't you go talk to that sheriff? You know.
So what? Well, where I'm at in this case so far is I sent in a demand for it's an objection it's an affidavit. It's an objection and then a demand for evidence, and it's a. Let me see what I have on here. I was challenging jurisdiction.
Well, they may have jurisdiction over you. But once they operate outside of a court of record on a criminal case, they no longer have jurisdiction on you. That's why you wanna take them to federal court for denial of jurisdiction.
I was asking for the nature and cause of the proceedings, and I'm asking for the evidence showing an injury of the fact that it was suffered, presented by the plaintiff, because the state can't be a plaintiff. I mean, there has to be an actual physical person, because I'm allowed to see my accuser, right? I'm allowed to face my accuser, and the accuser can't be the state's attorney. And so, I put in, whereas the verified complaint sworn under threat of perjury from the plaintiff, and then I gave them 14 days to reply to these, and then there's been nothing. So I have also in here that the that their silence would be acquiescent, and that if they dismiss this this lawful demand without any evidence backing it, then that's showing arbitrary and capricious motives or whatnot.
Here's the problem. A, they have no evidence. And they have a sworn statement that's not a sworn statement by a police officer. If you notice on the sworn statement, it's supposed to be an affidavit form, but if you notice on their sworn statement, there is no affidavit in the sense that it's not sworn before, you know, a notary or a magistrate or a judge or somebody. That's a sworn statement. That's number one. So if that doesn't exist, that's a problem, of course, with the court case. But I've got to go back to the same thing. Okay, if you're being charged with a crime, okay, any charge that's upon you that potentially could put you in jail, okay, and a misdemeanor, I presume, did they tell you that that's what could happen? You could potentially go to jail on this?
I'm not sure what the actual
Well, you didn't go talk to the prosecutor. Did you talk with the prosecutor and ask him what's the potential of this case here? Is this a criminal case on me, and what does that mean?
That's the part of the challenging the jurisdiction when you ask them what is the nature of this.
Okay.
Of this,
I'm trying to tell you
because that's when it gets into criminal or civil.
You're not going to get anywhere in the court with that. It doesn't sound like they're going to operate in any way that's right. That's what I'm saying, that the only way I think you could deal with this is for denial of due process. If there is no indictment, there is no crime. They can't apply it against you. End of subject, nothing else to talk about. That's the law. Now, they don't want to obey that law, and you're going to have to use the federal courts to apply that. But that's where I would start out, in that court, saying, is there an indictment against me? Okay.
Isn't that the proof of injury? Isn't that the same thing? Where's the proof of injury? Because that's what I requested in this.
It's not going to go anywhere. You have to ask straight out, is there an indictment against me for a crime? That's the question they need to answer. And if there is no indictment, then there really is no case. Okay? And then you have to have a trial by jury if there is an indictment. And if they don't want, and it can't be six people. A lot of these places will try to put six people up there or eight people. No, you need a full jury, and you need a fully informed jury. All that becomes part of the battle. I don't think they want to go through that for the misdemeanors, because that can cause problems for the rest of the misdemeanors coming in that court. And so they want to set any kind of precedence here. So, you know, you may be able to defeat the pressing that issue. And if they look at it, and if they turn to you and all of a sudden to offer you a deal, say, look, we'll give you a $500 fine, if I were you, I would accept that. Because I'll tell you, you're going to lose if you go to court because the whole thing's set up against you, number one. The other thing is, the only way to defeat it, from I can see, is moving it to federal court for cause. But if they get the indictment, then you don't have nothing to go by. So you got to be careful. You don't want to go to jail. That's the key thing, right?
Right, right. Well, so me sending this demand, it's been filed into the courts. I went and got a register of actions, and it's been filed into the courts. So now them not responding is their acquiescence, right? I mean, so now it should be a demand. I mean, it should be dismissed.
No, the courts, all these courts take some crazy time. I got a case, we filed the papers, and let me think, we still didn't get an answer. We got two cases going where we didn't even get an answer. We did get an answer from one, and the one that came an answer took like 2 months to finally get an answer from the court. We called the court on a couple occasions. Well, it's going to be a couple of months, this, that, the other thing. They drag their feet, they do what they want. We have another case, which is the same thing. It's quite a few months, and so you're not going to get anywhere with that argument. You're just not. Remember, you're dealing with evil courts. These courts are out of control. They're not courts of record. They're not courts of law. They're not courts of justice. If anything, they're courts of injustice. The doors.
Well, they're statutory courts. They're not even courts of law. That's what I'm dealing with right now.
Yes, exactly. And if did they use a statute to bring against you?
That's what these are. Yes, these are just statutes. This is I've already been bonded out. This is only $100 fines. I could have walked away, pled guilty, and walked away from it.
Okay, you should have done that and then go back and sue them if you want. But it's just not worth it. You should have taken that and walked because you're facing jail now, right?
No, I'm not really facing anything. I mean, I could just plead. I could tell them. I could change my plea at any time.
If they give you I strongly
I've already paid the fine, and that's all that was $100 fine to be bonded out. And
okay, so why are you still in court?
I guess I still am being charged with something. Then I guess I don't understand.
Well, you need to find out what's going on before you can know what to do. So I suggest try to find out, and if you have a question, you can hit us next week or the week after, but find out what's going on. And do you have a background in law in any way? Have you studied anything anywhere?
No, I don't have any background in any of this. Until I got arrested, I had no care in law. I've been trying to get out of the system. I've been trying to create minimum contacts with the system, and so I've been looking into it over the last couple of years, but nothing on the law side, not until this has happened. And now I've been finding more about my rights and how I've been on the crash course for the last 2 months now. I bought your course, the book and everything, and just trying to take a crash course, just trying to cram as much as I can, and then it's kind of, it's kind of overwhelming. And so,
yeah, it is. Look, it takes a time to digest this stuff. If you have somewhat of a background, you can get through it a lot quickly. If you, some people have the ability to move through things very quickly, but most people don't. And to really get a good feel of the course, you really want to spend 3 or 4 months at least going through the course at that kind of a pace. You remember, it's 90-hour course, so if you're doing 10 hours a week, okay, depending on how much time you have to put into it, but you have to be careful. You don't want to overwhelm yourself and not have the time to review things because, repetitivity is the key to all things. You've got to be repetitive on whatever you're trying to learn, because that's the only way it starts to stick in the brain and be able to fall off the tongue. So that's what I suggest to you there. If you can get out of this thing with a fine, get out of it. If you think that there is some kind of a criminal complaint against you, which is called a misdemeanor, and if it's facing a jail sentence, you need to deal with that. If the prosecutor is willing to just put it to a fine, I strongly suggest pay the fine because you don't want to go to jail. And then you could try to finish the course and figure out if you feel that you've been injured by these people, then you go back and sue them when you have knowledge.
But paying the fine would then be pleading guilty. Then how do you go back and sue for?
If you find out that you're in there at a misdemeanor and they say to you something like, well, look, you can go to jail for a year. Well, we can put you in jail for 6 months. But I'll tell you what, we'll give you $300. You give us $300 and we'll let you go. That's subversion ultimately. That is, there's a better word for that, of course. Trying to think of the word. But in any event, that's against the law. They're really pushing you to give them money is what they're doing.
Right.
And if that's what they're doing, fine. Look, you can go defend that in court later on. You had no choice. You were facing jail. You didn't want to go to jail. You gave them the money.
Right.
Extortion.
Well, I've gone two different ways with this. I'm challenging jurisdiction, and then I've also gone and became a secured party for the straw man.
That's not going to work anywhere.
Okay. Well, and well, I've seen some. I've seen. Well, I've been watching on both sides where people are trying to go at it with the law, and then there's people that are doing a sovereign thing, and there's ways around it, but. Yeah,
I'm not a true believer in the results that they offer. I really am not. I've been around this too long.
That's just it. You're not going to see the results in the open. That's it's going to be done in the private through the paperwork, and that's why I tried filing my forms and sending a motion to dismiss in the back scenes before we get to court, and that way these things are settled before we go to court. Like Matthew, what is it, 5 or 25 says. Agree with their adversary before you get to court. You know, you got to have these things be settled before you go to court, and that's why I'm pushing for these motions for demands and try to get this in the backs of the courts, and it's not done in the public. That's what they don't want. They don't want.
Right.
There is such thing as sovereign in the United States being corporate and all that, but they don't want the masses to know that. And so you have to do these things in the private.
We're preaching to the choir here. So, look, it's late. We got to move on, and we could talk some more next week. But I really want to tell you is this. You know, on our welcome page, if you go to our welcome tab, I think you're coming in on a browser or something, so you probably see my desktop. But underneath the welcome tab, you come down to NLA and the Sovereign Citizen Movement, and you can read up on what our position is on that. We started off in the Sovereign Citizen Movement because it made sense. It's a lot of logic. But we learned a lot. We do know that a lot of the stuff that they're teaching on the one hand is truth on how things happen. Talk, you know, we've learned about the 1871 Organic Act of 1871, how they turned it into a corporation. And we watched that whole process of things, and we understand all that. But the solution they're offering is going to get you into more trouble. And a lot of these people that are online teaching this stuff, they themselves have no successes. Maybe they have one success here or there, some of these people. They get lucky, okay? And it's probably in a traffic court where they get lucky. But you're not in a traffic court. You're in a court that claims to be a court of law, okay, which is really a civil law court. It's a municipal court is what it really is. And you're right. They don't have jurisdiction. But to make that argument and that court, it'll be a lot easier to go the other direction that I'm suggesting to you. Pay the fine, get out of there, educate yourself, go back and sue them. That's what I strongly suggest.
Okay.
So you got to find out if you're facing jail time. That's what you need. Come back and talk to us about that then, and we'll see once what we can suggest to you.
Okay.
But knowledge is the key thing also. You got to get knowledge. Right. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be, what Thomas Jefferson said. All right, we got to move on because it's way past our time, and we have one other caller, so we want to take this last caller. And if you want, we'll talk some more next week. Although next week we're doing Sheriff Dar, so may not be till the following week, depending on how much time he spends with us next week. So, okay.
All right.
All right, good talking to you. Next caller, Kenna, it looks like. Oh, we lost that. Nope. I guess they left the queue. All right, I guess we've come to the end of our program. We'll see everyone back next Wednesday, next Monday. And again, we're going to have Sheriff Dar here. It's going to be a good call, for a lot of good information from the perspective of the sheriff who knows the common law, the sheriff who understands the problems, and the sheriff is doing something about it. So he'll be here next Monday. Spread the word to your friends. Bring guests. We need to get a lot of people involved. All right, with that, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.